Hello, my friends. I am the Reverend Nancy Reed McKee, the minister at the North Lake Unitarian Universalist Church in beautiful Kirkland, Washington. Welcome to our podcast. We hold services each Sunday morning at 10:30 Pacific time, and we host a hybrid service where most people join us in person, but you're also welcome to join us online via Zoom. We publish excerpts from our selected services as podcasts, such as this one. To learn more about us or to reach out and contact us, please visit our website at northlakeuu.org. That's NORTHLAKEUU.ORG. I hope you enjoy this podcast and I look forward to hearing from you. Blessings. Back in 1976, Marge Percy wrote the book, Woman on the Edge of Time. This utopian novel tells the story of Consuela Ramos, a 37-year-old woman unfairly incarcerated in a New York mental hospital. Connie begins to communicate with the woman from the future, Lucieta, and after a while begins to time travel to Lucieta's home in the future year of 2037, named Mattapoisett. There, Connie is introduced to the agrarian income-sharing community where people are gender neutral, they use technology for social good, and business and corporate agendas are replaced with planning for social justice and respect for all humans. There is a deep respect and care for the earth. While Connie is time traveling, her body remains in the mental hospital, where she lies for hours in a coma-like state, which worries the doctors, which is good that they notice. They decide to intercede with a chemical implant, which then creates one of those butterfly effects where their intervention changes the trajectory of time so that the next time Connie travels, she goes to an alternative future. And this new future is consumerist, hyper-capitalist, environmentally devastated, racist, and gender stratified. She barely manages to escape from this dystopia, traveling back to 1970, where she then finds her own way to influence which path society might travel down. So one particular part of this story that has remained vivid in my memory for the past 40 years is the reverence for that the people of Mattapoisett held for water. They use it sparingly, relishing every single glass of water they drank, so careful about how this life-sustaining substance was used. They were horrified when they found out that people from Connie's time in the 1970s literally flushed water down the toilet. When I read this novel in 1981, I had no inkling at that time that water would ever be regarded as a scarce resource. This was long before water was put into bottles and sold in grocery stores. I remember when that first started happening, what a weird thing I thought that was. This was written decades before the water in Detroit became so contaminated that no one could have clean water in their homes. And it was decades before towns such as Rio Verde, Arizona, found their entire water supply cut off. But as water has come to be regarded as a valuable, even a sacred resource, I've often thought back to Marge Percy, wondering, how did she imagine this as a possibility 40 years ago? What was she thinking? Her creative imagination shaped me by describing possible futures, one a utopia, one a dystopia. She influenced the way I have made choices and the way I have imagined our world might be. Creative imagining. This is a term I'm hearing used a lot more these days. It's when we look for patterns or connections in the world, and we then use our imagination to wonder about them in ways that open up new possibilities, to wonder how things might be understood or experienced differently. Science fiction does this a lot, which is why I enjoy reading Sherry Tepper and Mary Doria Russell. There's a creative force that takes me out of the practical and the mundane into a place that opens me up to endless possibilities, stands me on my head. So a few weeks ago, I talked about Teresa Cooley's book, Transforming Conflict. The thesis of her book is that we have been approaching conflict in a way that hasn't worked. Too often we address conflict between people with concepts such as resolution or mediation, meaning we believe we're going to solve the problems, fix things, or at least find a way for people in conflict to talk to each other. We follow these steps of resolution, exploring who was right, who was wrong, or explaining the steps of the conflict. I did this because you did that. We ask why, when, what. But in her experience, these questions haven't worked unless there is some form of transformation that occurs in the individuals and in the system. Cooley proposes that this transformation comes from creative imagining. She uses those words, this whole concept of creative imagining. It comes from wondering such things as, how might we resolve this? I wonder how this could be different. How could we talk about this? She suggests using conflict as an opportunity, a way to imagine things to be different, to imagine how we could change the situation so it wasn't so hard or so harmful. Creative imagination is a way to allow growth and transformation to happen. She writes these words. The challenge of our time is to mobilize great masses of people to make change without dehumanizing one another, not just because it's morally right, but because it works. This work of transforming conflict is not just high-minded, it is also eminently practical. Isn't this exactly what we are trying to create in our religious communities, a space in which a person can find themselves anew, in which they can reconnect with a loving community and help everyone learn a new way of being? End quote. In the year 2000, Paul Ray, a sociologist, started to talk about a new emerging cultural group that is distinct from the traditionalists and the modernists of the past few centuries. He labeled this new group the cultural creatives. What distinguishes these people from others is that they are engaged actively in imagining new ways of being. Typically, we think of creativity in art, in music, in literature, or even in the way we play. But this new social category is used to identify people who use their imaginations to change the world. They imagine new ways of doing business, new ways of structuring family, new ways of making decisions. They see the surrounding culture as their playing field where all the norms can be changed. Rules and processes that have long been accepted can be questioned. Changing the very way we understand how our culture works, using our imaginations in ways that will alter the world as we know it, is all part of their creative work. We can see these imaginative people all around us. They're the ones always suggesting new ideas, pushing us out of our comfort zones, stretching our imaginations in disturbing ways, right? They're the people who have challenged us to think outside the box with such thoughts as, is gender actually binary, male or female? Or might it be a continuum that people move along? Is the traditional definition of marriage the only option? Or could there be more than two adults, more than two genders in a family unit? How might our legacy of the use of humans for commercial gain, the commodification of bodies, be influencing the way we understand democracy and capitalism? According to Paul Ray, fully one-third of the people in this room are part of this culture of creativity. They're the ones who think of new ways to do things, They're the ones who imagine new ways to do church together. And let's admit that this isn't actually always very comfortable for the two-thirds of us who are traditionalists or modernists. Frank Clark says, we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't. This place of creative imagining is just where we are called to be. This is the place where our personal transformation might begin. It is the place where social transformation might begin, and it may be what is required to save this planet. But it comes at quite a cost. In Steve's reading, he outlined the process of metamorphosis. We can apply this as an analogy to ourselves. Just as a caterpillar has to completely dissolve into an amorphous goo, our creative imagining can push us to enter that stage of transition where we are not sure who we are. It is uncomfortable and it is distressing, but it is also part of our personal as well as our communal metamorphosis. Out of the goo we melt into, the imaginal cells emerge to form us into something new. And this, I propose, is spiritual work. We enter into the process of letting go of our familiar patterns and letting something mysterious, something beyond our knowing, begin to shape us. Letting go and letting spirit is the stepping off point into the unknown, into the mystery, and to letting the spirit of life take us where it will. This is the work we do to become the people we always imagined we might be someday. The spiritual path is when we let go of the things we long to hold on to for stability's sake, but letting go to fall into a place of open uncertainty where our imaginal cells can shape us into new being, becoming our authentic selves. I close with this poem titled Holy Is This Place by the Reverend Maureen Killoran. Blessed is this ground on which we stand. Holy is this place. Holy are the places of memory, the places which have formed us, where we store the icons of success and shattered dreams, and gather threads and pieces of what we would become. Holy are the places of memory. Holy are the places of the dream, the places over the rainbow, where all children are wanted and all people are fed, where colors are the source of celebration and youth and age come to the table as one. Holy are the places of the dream. Holy are the places of change and pain, the places of our struggle, where the rivers of our lives run white and fast, and we hold on and grow. Holy are the places of change and pain. Holy are the places of connection, the places where we risk ourselves, where hands touch hands, touch souls, touch minds, and in awareness still we change our lives. Holy are the places of connection. Holy are the places of becoming, the places of clear vision, where life and world are intertwined, and we can see forever in this moment and give thanks. Holy are the places of becoming. Blessed is the ground on which we stand. Holy and whole-making is this place. Blessed be. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Northlake Unitarian Universalist Church podcast. We hope that the words you heard today have uplifted your spirit and perhaps inspired you on your journey. Remember, our mission is to nurture your spirit and to be part of the work of healing our world. If you would like to stay connected or learn more about our community, please visit our website at northlakeuu.org. We would love to hear from you and continue the conversation.
Thank you once again for being part of our podcast. Blessings to you as you journey onward.